So, I had a good week of movies.
A good week
How
of
to say
movies?
that? It ended with Ratatouille, which I watched this morning for the episode. But last week, what movie opened in theaters but The Quiet Place Part 2? And I would encourage anyone who's seen the first one, which Aiden Anderson, you haven't, you should get on that. But the Quiet Place 2 was like, I'm a little hesitant to say amazing, but it, like, I felt like it was amazing. Like, I was in the theater. I can't really remember the last time I went to a theater and was like, wow, I'm so happy I saw that in a theater. Like, this
Okay.
was that.
All right.
It was really exciting. It was a really good story. Not to mention, it's a sequel. It's hard to follow up a movie with a sequel, but John Krasinski, director, did a great job. Emily Blunt was in it, was really great. Cillian Murphy was kind of the guest appearance for this movie, and it was so good. So good. I encourage anyone to go see it. And it's great because it's like
Wow.
a horror movie, technically, but it's not like jump scare, really scary horror. It's kind of, I don't want to call it a family movie because there is some violence and like some horror aspects to it, but it's relatively family friendly in the horror genre. So really, really great work there. It kind of restored faith in movies, like, because it was like one of the first movies back from the shutdown. And so it was like, it felt like a very
Yeah,
cinematic
that's
experience.
fair.
It was so nice.
That's fair.
Second movie I watched was kind of the complete opposite, not in terms of it being bad, but like, I watched it at home on Netflix. I can't recommend this to the audience, especially younger audiences, because it was pretty adult and pretty violent. But Army of the Dead, which is Zack Snyder's newest movie, zombie movie, wasn't like when I talk about A Quiet Place being a really good movie, I mean, like, the writing's really good, the directing is great, all these things are really good. Army of the Dead wasn't like a great story, really great writing, any of that. It's kind of just an action movie, but it was super fun. Dave Bautista,
Legend,
who,
yes.
okay, is actually a good actor. Like, is actually pretty good in all the things he does, including Drax in the
Oh,
MCU,
yeah.
which he just announced he's done with, by the way.
Yeah.
He's done with Drax after Guardians 3. But anyway,
Here's
yeah, Zack
a
Snyder
theory.
actually.
Drax is gonna die in the third one. I'm calling
Wow,
it.
that's.
Prediction right
I
here.
hope that doesn't happen. That's sad. But Zack Snyder directed and did cinematography and did camera operating for this movie. The camera operating is very unique. It was fun to watch. But yeah, it was like kind of just a fun, you have to take it for what it is type of experience. But yeah, and then Ratatouille. So,
Classic.
yeah.
A classic.
So yeah, I really highly, I don't really highly encourage watching Army of the Dead. Like, it was just okay, but,
Yeah.
and I love a bit of Zack Snyder, but I highly encourage Quiet Place 2. Watch the first one first, please, because it's very much like a direct continuation. But yeah,
Yeah.
great experience.
Yeah. I remember we talked about it one time. Because I had seen like the ads for it, the A Quiet Place 2, and I was asking questions about the first one because I'm not a huge horror film guy. Like, really, just cannot sit through it. Not a fan at all. But I like discovered that I still haven't seen it, but A Quiet Place isn't really horror. It's more just like I think I described it to Michael as like, from what I picked up, it's just like a Stranger Things-esque thing, not like
Yes.
as child oriented as like the cast is or whatever, but just like the monsters and like the plot and things like that is kind of similarly done, if that makes sense.
I would argue that, yeah, I'd say that's a really good comparison, including like the monster looking kind of similar,
Yeah.
but like that level of horror where it's like, this is taking things from the horror genre. This is technically maybe in that genre, but it's more of a thriller suspense, I would say, than a horror. But there's some charm to Emily Blunt and John Krasinski being married and making a movie together. There's like, also, you love to watch, and this is kind of the appeal that Zack Snyder had with also being the camera operator. It's a similar thing for me, I think. The fact that John Krasinski was just, a character in The Office and was just an actor, comes and like writes a movie and directs it, and it's like not only successful and like a blockbuster hit that makes lots of money, but it's really, really good.
Yeah.
and clearly like, there's a lot of passion behind it. Was never planning on making a sequel until, you know, he realized he had a really good idea for one. And so, yeah, would highly encourage.
Yeah. Have you seen Zack Snyder's Justice League?
I haven't yet because I don't have HBO. But I need to get on it.
Yeah, dude.
Because I understand it's a lot better than the old one.
Yeah, 100%. I think we talked about it on the pod before, but I was in the mood earlier this week. I was like, man, I kind of want to rewatch that. I don't know why, but I just like, and I also, now that I'm not at NYU, I don't have HBO Max anymore. So
yeah,
kind of
right.
In a bind.
They take
that
away as soon as you're not in a dorm anymore. It's Zack Snyder has a very specific style that really came through in Army of the Dead, but he, you know, I think a lot of the movies, like 300's a great movie. Watchmen is pretty good. He's got highs and lows for sure, but like, you can't deny that like he's doing something unique, I think, especially with cinematography and just visual storytelling. I think he does some really cool stuff, and again, that really came through with the cinematography of Army of the Dead, which he did himself. But yeah. Anything else to report, Aiden?
Yes, I actually had a movie week as well. Not really a movie week, just a movie night last night. I came home from work at the coffee shop, not the the Sparks. And mm-hmm. I had some lunch with me, turned on the TV, and saw Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Okay.
And I was like, oh man, I can vibe with it. And then I got in the mood of it, but I had to go work for the Sparks because we had a game yesterday. And then after the game was over, I literally just like turned it back on and on Hulu and then watched Part 2 as well. So I got a good fill of the Deathly Hallows last night.
There you go.
And that was refreshing. I hadn't watched it since it came out when I was in like fourth grade or whatever.
Okay.
And realized that John Williams is the composer of the soundtrack. And yeah. It's just like, I can definitely tell like it's a super good soundtrack. John Williams is really brilliant. But
he's got some good stuff.
He does have some really great stuff.
In fact, I'm a lot more familiar with the soundtrack of those movies than I've never seen the movies, but like I'm pretty familiar with the music, which I think is a testament to how good that music is.
Yeah, definitely.
It's so recognizable and like it's good to listen to.
Yeah. Other than that, you know.
But you wouldn't. Okay, I'll go. Oh, sorry, we got the Zoom delay, guys. We're doing this remotely, by the way. So you're not as big of like a Harry Potter nut as a lot of people are, since you haven't seen it since fourth grade.
Yeah, I mean, I read all the books when I was in third, fourth grade, and that was mostly just for like the reading points or whatever. That like you get to go to like have a pizza party and like ride in a limo or
that's
whatever
what
those
about.
Things
yeah.
were.
Enter a raffle for an iPod.
Right.
Touch.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, I was definitely a fan of it. I actually have like this Elder Wand that I got from Universal Studios. Definitely not as much. I would say I'm definitely more of a Marvel and Star Wars nerd than a Harry Potter
sure.
nerd nowadays. Yeah. But
right.
The LA Sparks, we're on a roll. We've won two in a row.
Hey, nice.
We're now 4-3. And an update. One of the interns, the graphic design intern, has moved on and got a new job with Under Armour, which is super sick. And so, because of that, I've taken on some more responsibility, in the
nice.
Design realm, which is really cool. Definitely doing a lot more work and, not that it matters or anything, but it's getting posted on social media and like my name's not attached to it or anything, but it's just like cool to see stuff that like, and like some of it is like templates that they send and I just plug stuff into it, but it's still cool to see stuff that is on my computer and then 3 minutes later is on a social media page that has
right.
like 300,000.
And beyond the credit, it's like you're like, you know, an influence and like you're a part of that whole thing. And that's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Beyond, like, just getting credit for
definitely
it.
A cool experience. I'm really thankful to have that. So,
yeah. Hey, so we're going to take a break real quick and we're going to get into Ratatouille.
Ratatouille. We'll be right back.
Yeah, so...
What's up, YouTube? Welcome back to my channel. Don't forget to smack the like button.
Just wanted to say real quick, actually, in addition, before we get into Ratatouille officially, thank you guys for listening. Thank you for listening through the gap weeks. We've gone like every other week for the past like month. So yeah. Thank you guys so much for sticking through.
Yeah, shout out.
Getting pretty normal listens. So
yeah.
Thank you guys
and,
for the support.
And happy to report we're still on pace for our season goal, which is super sick.
Of 1,000.
Yes, listens. I think it's going to come down to the wire, but I have faith and our listener base to get it done. So that's so cool, man.
It is. It feels good. It feels good, man.
Yeah. So looking forward to this last quarter of a season that we have. Last third, I guess, whatever. But
absolutely.
But yeah, let's get into it. Whoops.
Yeah, so 2007's Ratatouille, directed by Brad Bird. Kind of famous for the Iron Giant, Incredibles sort of thing. This is in my top four movies of all time.
Wow.
Favorite, not best.
Okay.
Not best, all right. But favorite.
All
right. It's on my Letterboxd Mount Rushmore list. So thought I'd pick this. Throw in another animation. We've only done Lego Movie as far as animations go. So, yeah. Aiden, what's your previous opinion on this? Opinion on watching it again? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it's definitely been a while since I watched it. And I was looking forward to watching it again. Just because it is, like, you know, not even arguably, like, it is probably one of the best animations that Pixar has made, animation films.
What, without a doubt, yeah.
Did just want to say our good friend JR, after we posted on social last week that we were doing Ratatouille, JR slid up on the story and said, really went from Endgame to Ratatouille. And I said, we really did. We have no chill. So
double Disney, but...
We have no
double
chill,
Disney, but could not be more different.
And we're jumping to something very different next week as well. So,
yeah, we definitely are.
But,
go ahead.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. One of the, like, the last notes I made is like, it's definitely like a family friendly film. But it's definitely a film that's for anyone. Like, I found it entertaining when I was a kid, and here I am at 20 years old, and I'm like still laughing.
Sure.
Like quite a bit. Like it's a pretty comedic Pixar film, and there was a lot of stuff that actually made me like laugh pretty hard. So
yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, really enjoyed it. I won't get too deep into my stuff. I'll save it for later. But what makes it so good for you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking up the release date. It was June 29th, 2007. So I was 6 years old when this came out.
Oh, wow.
I don't like thinking about that.
That's crazy.
I'm 20 now. But thinking back to it, I very specifically remember watching this movie in theaters and on the way home, like talking to my family about it, like talking to my family about the themes of the movie, and which is something I didn't really think I ever did when I was six. But this was, and like you said, it's like a movie for everyone. It was a compelling enough kids movie that my whole family was talking about with each other. And sure, my dad was humoring us and like just having conversation with us about what we just saw, but you know, it is compelling enough to have a conversation about, which is what we're doing now and what I did when I was six with my dad. And so like, and that sticks with me. And I think like that's why it's one of my favorite movies, is just the way it made me feel back then, the way like I watched it today. Pixar is really good at that. Like, I'm really excited for Pixar's next movie, which is about those kids in Italy that are like fish kids. it looks really cool.
No, I'm not,
but
I'm not familiar.
But Pixar is so good at making movies. It's like Luca, I think.
Oh,
I think it's called Luca.
I have no idea. I haven't heard of it.
Look that up right now.
Yikes.
Yeah, Luca, 2021 film, about like two kids that are like amphibious. It looks
Whoa.
Weird, but it looks good. But no, I was watching a video on Disney adults, which is like a coined phrase about like adults that are obsessed with Disney. And I wouldn't consider myself a Disney adult, but there is an appeal to Disney because they do talk about adult concepts and teach lessons that like adults go through as well as kids, and are just palatable for everyone. Like Wall-E and Up and Incredibles and Ratatouille are kind of like the four I think of in terms of like movies that talk about like adult concepts that everyone can pick from. Monsters, Inc., I guess you put in there too. So, yeah, I would say...
Oh, what a classic, dude. Monsters, Inc.?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was thinking like... you said this is like probably without a doubt one of the best Pixar movies. I would place Toy Story, Monsters, Inc., Up, and Wall-E, like, next to it,
I think. Yeah, those are some classics, man.
Yeah.
That's, like, prime, like, mid-2000s.
Should we just jump into different things?
Any thoughts
initially?
Yeah. I liked the opening, where it was, it kind of just, like, set the stage for, you know, not necessarily the rat, our rat friend Remy, but about the restaurant itself that's in Paris and kind of like the main villain of the story.
Antoine Ego.
Yes, Antoine Ego. And it's interesting how that, you know, came first rather than introducing us to, you know, the rat at first. But thinking about it, like, I don't know that introduction would have made sense anywhere else, if that makes sense. So kind of well placed, I would say. It sets up the villain right off the bat, you know, not necessarily the villain, but you know, this obstacle to overcome, and like I already know what's gonna happen, so like I knew that's what was going on. But the I thought that the voice acting on Remy, absolutely great. Patton Oswalt, absolute legend, such a great voice. You know, just in the little intro role there, where we first meet Remy, you can tell right off the bat, he's just a really comedic character.
He's a real special
guy. He's a special guy. he's comedic, but also at the same time, like, one thing that I really enjoyed about the film is how much everything is like humanized, if that makes sense. And how much we can relate to just like this group of rats or this one rat specifically. I thought that was interesting, and I enjoyed seeing that in the opening role, but I'll let you hop in here.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Like, great voice acting, I think, across the board. And the intro itself, I don't think that an animation should get a special pass for using, like, common film techniques, because it is a film itself, and, like, it should be treated as such. And I think, like, I've talked about being a proponent of stop calling it animation, because there's different, you know, types of it. Let's just call them movies, and then they happen to be animation. Which is kind of like the argument for anime as well, which is confusing why there are so many anime fans. I don't know. A long tangent. I don't know that they should get a special pass, but it is so fun to see a movie using voiceover, an animated movie using freeze frames. And using these things that, like, were established. The freeze frame, I think, was established in French New Wave in the 1950s, and it's like something that's been used over and over again, but like to see Remy jumping out of the window and like the glass freezes in midair, and then to pause on Emil, his brother's face, and say, "This is Emil," or "This is my dad." And, you know, to have those freeze frames, I think, is a good storytelling technique. You see the same thing later, or not the same thing, but a similar thing used, like with like passing the time through like crossfades and like Remy switching places. And these are all things that you think of in a cinematography and in a live action, I think, context, but to see in animation is always fun. And it's great. I think that's kind of like what I always walk away with from a Pixar movie, is like these are thought of as live action movies. Like, this is thought of from a cinematic perspective. This is like really cinema. But their medium just happened to be computer generated pictures and not humans. And I think that's what makes them so great.
There was another thing that I wrote down that kind of relates to that. There were so many fast paced scenes, just like shots that led, it was just like a quick pan over to something else happening. And it felt like a real movie when that happened, not an animation. Like, I could see, you know, I'm sure we've talked about it. There's over so many films that we've watched, like, I already forget what films we've watched, but I'm sure we've talked about it before, and it really brought out the realism in the movie. And, you know, especially in the kitchen, I felt like there were a lot of quick pans and these fast-paced transitions. It definitely created the chaos that comes with a kitchen, especially in, like, a high-end restaurant or something. Really love that. Like I said, the realism of the rats living like humans is interesting. Especially, I really love the evacuation scene where the ceiling fan falls down, and oh my god, I just cringed so bad when I saw all those rats sitting there. God, that was so that grossed me out. Just where everyone scurries and like the sirens are going off and everyone's like, oh my gosh, get to the evacuation boats or whatever, and everyone's loading up. But like it just felt like so real, like in a human aspect. That I don't know, just really fascinating.
Absolutely. No, totally. And I think, like you talked about, like the fast-paced nature, and like I said, visually stimulating, like the action sequences in this are fun to watch. The old woman shooting at them while they're trying to escape, that's a fun scene to watch. Mm-hmm. And you're right, it feels real. Like all those moments of like rats all over the screen, all over the frame, it feels like a bunch of rats, and like you get that feeling, and I think that's so well done. And it's so interesting, like or when he first falls into the kitchen from the ceiling panel into the kitchen of Gusteau's restaurant, like that fast-paced environment when he's like jumping in and out of stoves and like onto the waiting cart and into the dining room, and all those, that is so well edited. Mm-hmm. Like you have the pause break from like him going from the busy kitchen to like the music changing and it's being really quiet in the dining room. Mm-hmm. You have like then back to like the high octane action of the kitchen. Like that is so well edited, again, like in such a cinematic way that I think can be lost in animation. And you see it in a lot of animation today because there's a lot of great animation made today. But I think like you can think of, I can't even think of an example of like a animation that doesn't use that. But like, I think your average like children's show isn't using that same type of animation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so well done. And that animation is baked in from the start of the process because these are animators that sit down. This isn't like you like film a scene and you can split it up however you want. Like to a certain extent, that's how it works. But it's also like you're very aware from the start when you're animating how that's going to transition. You're very aware of that. So really, like really solid job. And man, you said something else there that reminded me of something. Like just so many things were fun to watch. Like the cooking scene when he first cooks the soup, and he's jumping over the pot and like throwing things in. It's just all very well edited and just very, there's such a rhythm to everything. I'll get back to the rhythm later, but there's just such a good rhythm to everything that goes on.
Yeah, I think in addition to the way that things looked, sounds were definitely a huge factor in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, kitchen noises and things like that. One instance that I really loved was the girl, I forget her name, you know me, bad with names.
Colette.
Yes, Colette, thank you. Was helping Linguini, right? Linguini, and she was talking about bread, and it's not about the way that it smells or the way that it looks, it's the way it sounds. And like they hold it up to their ear,
it's the symphony of crackle,
and she crackles it, and like I could just see someone in a sound studio holding up like a piece of bread and just like squeezing it to death. I don't know, like I normally, I mean, obviously, when I was six, I didn't think that when I watched the film. I was just like, whatever. But I think, you know, especially you being in film school and, like, my exposure to working on film sets and things like that, like, you see the magic that goes into movies and, like, just seeing that instance in a film and being like, oh, like I know how they did that, and that's neat, you know.
No, absolutely. Foley Studios are fascinating.
100%.
And I'm gonna, like, not to ruin the magic, but it likely wasn't bread that they were holding up. Right?
Yeah, it was probably like, you know, a steak like of celery or something. Like something. That. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, that's awesome. It was probably like three different sounds. So, no, but you're totally right. And like, I don't know, just a creative element to put in the movie as well.
Yeah.
Like, to have them, maybe that is something like that. I don't know. I'm not a chef. I don't cook really a little bit, but like not beyond eggs.
Yeah.
But like, well, like maybe that is something they do in a kitchen, like listen to the bread. If so, that's good research and like a way to put that in the movie. But like, just such a, it's so much more interesting than just saying, now we pick bread.
Yeah.
let's listen to the bread. Let's do all these things. You know, it's like, it's, just a good way to
tell
the story.
If the bread looks good, we use it. That's all. Just cut it up and toss it in.
That's me. That's how I shop. Oh, does this have mold on it? No. Okay, I'll get it. In addition to that, I think like there's just a lot of good choices like that. I had a professor that said like crying isn't cinematic. It's like so many students put a person crying in their student films, and that's not cinematic. Holding back tears is cinematic. It's like that's just so much more meaningful than like actually crying, is trying not to cry. I think that like there's the moment of, and this has to do with character, I think, as well, but the moment when he reveals that that Remy is actually the real chef. Colette walks up to him after he thinks that she's stayed behind. He's like, you're the last one here. She almost slaps him. She raises her hand to slap him, and he braces himself for it. And she doesn't slap him.
Yeah.
And like that's so much more meaningful than a slap, I think. It's like a slap means one thing, and then, you know, instead choosing not to, I think, is so much more meaningful. So pulling punches like that, I think, is important. And there's a lot of examples, not literally of like pulling punches or like holding something back, but just like little choices in the storytelling that mean a lot. In that, I'll talk about that sequence later. I'll put an asterisk by that. But yeah,
I think kind of what you said about, you know, holding but the slap back, I think, you know, in so many films that we've probably seen, whether that be in a theater experience or like watching it with our family or whatever, like you see someone get slapped in the face and then there's like sudden, like really brief crash of music. You know what I mean? Like this really just like quick one beat thing that happens in the soundtrack, and then people in the audience kind of start laughing, whatever. Like, oh, you just got slapped in the face. Especially like in a kid's audience, I guess. I could definitely see that happening. And I think, you know, that creative choice to hold that slap back really works. I think the slap, you know, going through with that kind of leads me to majority of what I wanted to talk about was just like a lot of cliches happening. And I don't, like, I'm not really upset about it. Like, I'm not like, oh, this movie's bad because there's so many cliches. I think, like, obviously it's a family-friendly film, and it's not a huge block, but like, it's not a Tarantino film. Like, it's not meant to be this masterpiece of cinema, you know? It's just meant to be like a good time for family to watch stuff together. But like, I don't even remember like what right after that scene when she walks out after the slap, she's riding her motorcycle down, and obviously if it cuts to her, you know that something's going to happen that makes her want to turn back around, right? Like, she's already left. What's the point of going back to her unless she is going to come back in the story? And it cuts to her, sure enough, and she's sitting there, she's like holding back tears on the bike, and then she looks over, and what do you know? The motif of Anyone Can Cook, the book, shows up in the window, and you're like, ah, of course that's there. Like, why wouldn't it be there? Just like a lot of stuff like that I felt going on. I didn't write down all the examples that I had, but it was just like another one, the classic Disney kiss. Like, it happens in literally every film. But yeah, just a lot of cliches going on that didn't necessarily make it bad, but just like stuff that I picked up on quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a little coincidental that the book was there, right? I want to go back as well to what you said about, like, you would typically see a slap and, like, then people would laugh, especially kids would be like, oh, wow, he slapped her, she slapped him, or whatever. I think that is, like, something you would expect from most movies, is, like, I think you would expect a slap. And so, like, to have the foresight and the knowledge to be able to say, okay, not slapping is more effective, I think is important, because, like, I think most movies would deliver a slap. And I think Pixar is also good at not pandering to kids in terms of, like, slapstick humor. Because, like, again, you see from a lot of animated movies, like, oh, let's just have this character fall off of something or get hit by something, and, like, kids are going to love that. And that's true, they do. And there's not really a ton of that in this movie. There's the one instance I noticed it when the guy on the bike who has baguettes in the back of his bike, yeah, which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
But the guy on the bike looks at Remy as he's walking down the street and runs into the back of a car and, like, lands on it. It's like, that was the one, like, bit of unneeded physical humor that, like, was thrown in there because it's funny. And there wasn't a lot of that, which I think I appreciated.
Yeah.
Other physical humor involved, like, the way that Linguini moves while he's being puppeted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, that is story-driven. That's okay. But, yeah. I wanted to actually quickly stop on that. It is incredible. I don't know if it's storytelling, if we just accept it because it's a Pixar movie. I don't know why. But it is incredible that we buy the plot of this movie.
Yeah.
It is incredible yeah. that, like, Remy pulls Linguini's hair to make his arms move, and we're just okay with that. Yeah. We go, oh, sick. Okay, this yep. is going to work. And, like, I thought that for the first time watching this. I was like, you know, this works. I don't know how. It's like, we don't question this. We don't think twice about it. We're like, okay, yes,
yeah.
this is how the movie's going to go.
Yeah. There's definitely... Yeah.
And I think, I just real quickly on that point as well, I think that, like, it's similar... Like, the rats cooking at the end just made sense. And I think it's just, like, I don't know if it's good storytelling, if it's, like, just good choices before the script was even written to choose rats, but it's, like, something about a rat colony working together to do something. Obviously, rats can't cook 5-star dishes. Like, that's not real. But it made sense that they were rats. And, like, all that just fits together so well. And I just thought it was... It's crazy that a movie like this is made and then suddenly... It's like Toy Story's made and toys coming to life is, like, now a thing,
mm-hmm.
like, that you think about. Mm-hmm. A rat being under a chef's hat is something now that is a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just Disney creates these new conventions, which I think is impressive.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, there were definitely a lot of points in the film where I was like, wow, that is totally unrealistic. And obviously, I mean, just like the entire plot is based off of a rat sitting in a chef's hat controlling a guy by pulling his hair. Like, that's the most unrealistic plot of all time.
Right.
But there is a conversation that Remy had with his dad that was, like, super intellectual. Like, when they were standing outside the store that had the rat poison and the mouse traps and stuff like that. I was mm-hmm. like, no, that's why is a rat having this super super, like, human level intellectual conversation with his rat father about his passion for cooking? Super weird. Also, the lady using the shotgun to kill the rats, totally unrealistic. Like, I literally just, like, leave and call the exterminator or whatever. Like, why would I pull out my shotgun and ruin my house? And
I know that's always funny to me.
I think, yeah. You mentioned all the rats in the kitchen. Like, whenever the girl walked back in the kitchen, she sees all the rats. She's like, okay, fine, let's get to work. I'm like, no, like, that would never happen. You would, I mean, obviously, you would see the rat in the chef's hat, and you'd be like, okay, that's really kind of gross. I'm not gonna work for this guy. Yeah, you come back. Anyways, and then you see all these rats, and you're like, all right, cool, let's get back to work. And then the critic knows that the rat is the chef and is like, oh, brilliant, let's Like, let's keep going, you know? Very unrealistic. But
okay, but Aiden, Colette was the one that truly believed the entire time that anyone could cook, including a rat.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what you're missing.
You're right. You're right. But you mentioned the... there was, you know, in a lot of Pixar films, there's a lot of themes that are shared throughout a lot of the films. And, you know, not every film has the same exact ones, but there are some that, you know, share some themes. You know, a collective group has the same themes, but not all themes. And I think one of the biggest ones in this one was family. You know, the rats in the kitchen all together at the end. The dad, you know, even though he's not in support at first of Remy being a chef and helping and living and being friends with a human, you know, comes to terms that his son is really passionate about it and has the guts to chase after his dream. This is so weird that I'm talking about this in context of a rat.
I know.
But, you know, it's really cool to see the entire family rally behind someone and help them achieve what they, you know, are passionate about. And then additionally, one theme that I picked up on was, was this idea of art and artists and, you know, the theme that anyone can cook is present throughout most of the film. And the critic at the end says something along, I don't have the exact quote, but he says something along the lines of, I did not.
I think I have the exact quote.
Okay, you want to read it for me?
Well, is it the one about artists?
Yeah, it was just like, he didn't understand at first that, like, not anyone can cook, but a cook can come from anywhere or whatever.
Yeah.
And an artist, like, not everyone can be an artist, but an artist can be anyone and can come from anywhere. And I think, you know, that was present for not just Remy, but a lot of the characters in the film, which is really cool. And I think that's so realistic and carries over into real life as well.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I have a lot to say about that. You know, there's a lot of like, there's so much truth in all of that. And I think it's interesting what they do with like the opinions of the characters, because the protagonist, I guess Ego is the true antagonist, but Skinner, the chef at Gusto's, is as well an antagonist. But the protagonist and the antagonist, meaning in this case Remy and Skinner and Ego, begin with the same opinion, where Remy does judge Linguini as just being a garbage boy who couldn't cook, even though all the while he's a rat who thinks he does belong in the kitchen. So he believes in himself, but doesn't think that Linguini is able to do it. Well, not that he's not able to cook, because truly Linguini isn't able to cook, but he thinks that Linguini doesn't matter and that he's not a part of that kitchen. And so they kind of start with the same idea, whereas Colette is the only person really in the whole story that truly believes that anyone can cook, or believes in that mantra, at least, and understands the mantra that Gusto had. And even Linguini really doesn't believe in himself. By the end of the story, you have Django. Actually, Remy's dad's name is Django, by the way.
Yeah.
They never say that in the movie, I don't think.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Do they say that in the movie?
No, they do not.
Yeah. Okay, so Django, Remy's dad, not to be confused with Jamie Foxx's character from Django Unchained, spelled the same. He's prejudiced against the humans for the fact that they kill them, and, you know, are mean to them. But he learns to work with them when he sees the passion that Remy has for Linguini and food in general, and working with them. Colette was the complete opposite, where she doesn't like the rats and is, like, adverse to that when she finds out that they cooked, but then, you know, comes around and works with them, and at the end runs a restaurant with rats. Remy doesn't think that Linguini is important in the role in the kitchen, but fate and you know, his friendship with Linguini allowed Remy to pursue his dream of cooking. Like, he wouldn't have been able to do so without Linguini's help. Skinner, he's after the money in the restaurant, obviously, and, like, just about the status of being the chef. Mm-hmm. And he thinks Linguini's, like, illegitimate and, like, doesn't have a role in that kitchen. Mm-hmm. And doesn't want rats in the kitchen, obviously, which, you know, is an understandable yeah. opinion to have. Yeah. Like, doesn't want rats in the kitchen. Yeah. It's pretty, but in the context of the story, that's really mean. Yeah. To not want rats,
like,
in the kitchen.
Really, dude? Come on. That is, like...
yeah. That's discriminatory for sure. And then Ego learns, like, the importance of the emotion and the passion behind the cooking, because he sees this rat that's able to cook and has passion for it, and he understands, like, the beauty in that beyond just, like, how good is the food, which the food was also good, obviously, but he learns something new and learns what that mantra, anyone can cook, means in the first place, like you just said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also so significant, and this is one of the big things that I remember talking about in the car when I was six, like, it was so significant that the choice to bring back Ego to his childhood and remembering his mother giving him ratatouille after he got hurt on his bike, mm-hmm. and that comforting him.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that comfort and passion and emotion that reminded him of, like, what really is important about food and about cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was so significant, such a great way to turn that character around. And Linguini, I think, truly learns his self-worth. And that he can, like, you know, play a different role in everything. He's the vessel that Remy wouldn't have been able to do what he did,
mm-hmm.
Without. And also just, like, it's, like, fated that, you know, he's Cousteau's unknown son, you know, that pops up out of nowhere and, like, suddenly, you know, means everything to everyone. And that is also part of the fate of, like, Remy. So I think all those things were very important.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll try to speed this up, but I think that there's, like, a theme of, like, an appreciation for greatness, because you see that in Ego. He, like, only wants great food and will not give 5 stars to anything that isn't great. But learns to, you know, I guess, I don't know if being open-minded is the right terminology, but he learns to appreciate, you know, the passion as well. And you see, like, the flip side of that, of, like, Skinner is pushing out frozen food and, like, a bunch of products that are selling really well overseas, mm-hmm. in France. And, you know, that's, like, the flip side of it, of, like, he's just in it for the money, and, like, that's not okay. But there's also, like, a middle ground there, maybe. I just have a couple more things to say, but you have anything to add?
Yeah, going off the food bit, classic example of show, don't tell. Something that we have discussed quite frequently on the pod. But just when he takes a bite of food, you know, the movie cuts straight back to him in his childhood. Doesn't say anything. There's no conversation between him and his mom. It's just, like, a scene of him eating the food when he was younger, and it cuts back to him.
Yeah.
Back in the restaurant, doesn't say anything. He just smiles and, like, eats it all up. And sure, he, like, mentions it later, like, with the voiceover of him writing his critique. But, like, I thought that scene was really brilliantly done. Like, you just know, you mm-hmm. know what's going on without anyone having to say anything at all. And,
yeah,
like, I don't know, even though it's an animation, like, it still works, and it's still, like, a really great scene.
I that's, like, one of the last things I had to say as well is, you know, you see this throughout the movie. There's a lot of fast action scenes without any words. There's a lot of, like, things happening without words. I have a note here before I get into, like, one of my last things. It's, I have, there's really good framing at times, for visual storytelling. Like, I think always too, they're up cooking the mushroom on the, TV antenna above the chimney, and there's lightning striking in the background, so you know exactly what's coming, and then the lightning hits them, and that was just great framing. You could tell exactly what was going on by the stature of the characters and everything. But yeah, you're totally right in terms of visual storytelling, and I want to just make a note that, like, I was getting emotional by the end of the movie with that last sequence because of just how well done it is. The last 20 minutes, there's really not much dialogue, and the dialogue that there is, like, is totally not needed. Like, you have, like, the sequences of them cooking, the editing, and just the rhythm of all the rats cooking in the kitchen, and, like, having all the different tasks, like, it's just so on beat, and it's so well done. So well done. And then, yeah, you have him go back in time. Great visual storytelling. And then you have Remy voicing over, like, saying, "Ego waited till everyone left. Then we told him everything." And he didn't say much. He didn't respond, except for a couple questions here and there. Then he stood up, thanked us for the meal, and left without another word. Like, that's, I think, a lot of it. And, like, you don't need those words. You have it because that's what happened at the beginning of the movie, a voiceover, and they wanted to end it like that, I think, and just show that he was telling the story at the very end. But it's so visual as well, and you could tell everything that was going on by the visuals. And then you have Ego's voiceover at the end, which was just such a good choice to have the critique from the newspaper as the final kind of word. And you have, like, the parallel action of, like, Colette in bed and Linguini in bed and, like, them going home and cleaning up the restaurant. And, like, it's very effective and it gets the emotions just right. And, yeah, just that whole last 20 minutes is just very, very good filmmaking because of just the visual language that was brought out and the emotion that they were able to invoke through the critique and everything like that. Yeah, I've got one more thing. If you got anything,
go for it. Go for it.
Okay, appreciate it. Just making sure. Yeah. So last thing, I have two more things. I loved Remy speaking to himself through Gusto. And it didn't really occur to me. It's pretty obvious, I guess, but it didn't really occur to me that that was the case until this time around. Or I guess just never really thought about it, but he's not talking to Gusto, he's talking to himself. So, like, he has, like, Gusto's telling him to go up and look around, and, like, Remy's, like gearing himself up to go do that himself, or, like, telling him that a thief takes, like, a cook makes, a thief takes, like, don't steal from the kitchen. Like, that's Remy knowing that he's not supposed to steal. And when he later goes and steals from the kitchen when Linguini gets mad, like, he also is telling himself that, but ignores Gusto's ghost. It just shows, like, the power of the self, I think, which is a big theme of the movie. Like, he's gearing himself up to go do these things, not anyone else, not Gusto. And he's led by Gusto. And which is really just himself. And it's just about, like, him being in a world that isn't for him. He's trying to cook in a human kitchen. And it's really himself and the friends that he makes, like, helping each other get to where they're trying to get. I think that was really well done. And, like, there's another instance of, like, proving his knowledge of the positions of the restaurant. Like, he's just, like, reinforcing his own knowledge to himself, which I thought was really funny. And he, like, is affirming himself at the very beginning through degrading Linguini and saying that Linguini doesn't matter. Like, that was Gusto he was talking to, but it's really just himself. And then final thing I have is, like, I noticed, and you notice this watching Pixar movies over the years, that the render quality of the movies isn't quite as good as they are today. Like, the quality of computer animation is getting better and better, and so watching something from 2007 doesn't look quite like it does today. And, like, Incredibles from 2004 is even a little bit worse, and, like, Toy Story from 1995 is, like, way below what you see today. But it's very slight for this movie. But what I will say is, like, where the render quality dips a bit, the animation is really solid. The way the characters move, their facial expressions, the way they jump around screen, the camera movements, the animation's all super good. There's, like, really, really realistic bits of, like, their whiskers, the way that they bend, the way their fur looks, stuff like that, and the light coming through the, like, I noticed one time the way the light wrapped around the fur and the way that the light came through their ears and changed the color of the skin in their ears. Like, the lighting, where the render lacks a bit, the lighting really comes in to make it realistic. And I would say that's true of the entire movie. And just, like, another reason this is so cinematic and such a good animation, because it's treated like a real movie with real lighting. And, like, the lighting is very, very good. And I think kind of brings everything out. And I think without stuff like that, you would notice the render quality is not as good as it is today. Like, the lighting and just, like, the artisanship that goes into the way these characters look, down to, like, their whiskers, is just so well done. And the movement. I mean, in Pixar, the animation of the characters' movement is always there. Like, that's nothing new. But yeah, really, really solid.
Yeah.
They animate on another level. And that has a lot to do with money and everything, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's it from me. I rushed through that there. But a lot to say about this movie.
Hey, it's a good movie. I mean, I think I told my parents that we were doing Ratatouille, and they were like, wow, really going from Marvel to Ratatouille? And I was like, well, I mean, it's a good mix, whatever. And I hope that our audience is not like, we're not like losing, what's the word I'm looking for?
Interest?
Credibility. There we go. I hope we're not losing credibility an animated film.
If we lose credibility because they don't like Ratatouille, I don't want.
I think what we're doing here is, obviously we're watching a large assortment of films, but I think one of the big things that we're doing and that we enjoy, like, that's one of the things we enjoy about the pod, is that, you know, we've talked about before Martin Scorsese's thing about, like, Marvel isn't cinema, you know. But I think, I mean, we've both expressed that, like, we see where he's coming from and we can agree and disagree with him. But I think what we're doing is showing that, you know, any film is worth watching. And if it's bad, it's bad. And if it's good, it's good, you know. That's the beauty of cinema, is there's so much to watch and that, you know, anything can surprise you. So,
and I'll finish with this statement. If you think that Endgame is cinema and Ratatouille is not, you are a ridiculous person. That's all I'll say. I'm not calling anyone out. I'm just saying, if that's your opinion,
like my parents, you calling out my parents right now?
No, I'm not. I'm not saying that they thought that. I'm not saying that they suggest that, because that's not what you said. But, man, Ratatouille is cinema, man. And I'm not saying Avengers is not. I never said that, but
cinema is cinema, you know.
Yeah. Let's go with that. So Aiden, you're picking the next movie.
Yeah, I'm debating between two, and I think I'm gonna do both eventually at some point. So the one that I don't pick is probably gonna be my next one. But just in terms of having a busy week next week, I think I'm gonna go with the shorter one. Gonna roll with La La Land.
Damien Chazelle.
2016, right?
Yeah.
2016 musical film. I guess, I don't know. Yeah, musical romance film that starring Emma Stone, which, my gosh, I love Emma Stone. Ryan Gosling, the two main characters.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can find it on, I did some research. Looks like you can pay for it on Prime Video for $3.99, on Apple TV for $3.99, or if you have a premium Hulu account, you can get it on there for, it's included in the subscription. So, many ways to watch this. Sorry for the inconvenience of having to pay if you are willing to watch, but it is a really great film, one of my favorites. So, excited to talk about it with you.
I made it. Yeah, I'm super excited about this one. Second musical we've done. It's gonna be fun to compare to Singing in the Rain, because there's definitely influence there. So yeah.
Yeah. I think that is about it. Wow, the lag is real here. I think that is about it.
The lag's bad, guys. Thank you all for It's really killing us. I'm gonna trash shut this out, and Ain's probably gonna trash shut it out in the middle as well. So, thank you guys so much for watching. I'm excited about La La Land next week. We should get a lot more consistency this summer. Thank you again for supporting through the inconsistent weeks. We so appreciate your support. Aiden, the floor is yours to close us out.
Sorry about that, guys. Thank you all for listening. Like Michael said, appreciate the support. And we will be back next week with another episode 15 of season 4 on La La Land. Peace.